The breastfeeding? Yeah, we can get that. I don't think you did it for this analysis, but...
We didn't have enough breastfeeding in this, because it goes back to 2005, and we didn't have enough information on that at the time.
The case registry is collecting data on breastfeeding and non-breastfeeding health.
And there's a brand new article by Peter Fleming in Pediatrics, October 19th, that just came out looking at breastfeeding, bed sharing, and the whole SUID issue.
No, that's good information. I will tell you, though, we do have a significant number of breastfeeding deaths that happen even during, you know, when the mother fell asleep breastfeeding. It's not like they don't exist.
I know they exist. It's just be interesting to see what that number is. Yep.
Hi, everyone. There'll be plenty of time for questions. I'll probably have a little shorter presentation because I think some of the information I was going to cover you've heard previously. My name is Lindsay Myers, and I work at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. I'm the Injury Prevention Program Manager, as well as I also oversee the Colorado Child Death Review process, which we call the Child Fatality Prevention System. Here, so you'll see that on some of the slides. So I'm here today to give you an example of how we're putting these concepts into work. We have been part of the Sudden Unexpected Infant Death Case Registry Project, as Lena mentioned, since it began in 2009, and so we're just starting now to have enough data to kind of figure out how we can use it. And so this is a little bit early in our process, but I'd like to share some of the ideas that we have, both at the state and local level, for taking the recommendations that come out of child fatality reviews or child death reviews and actually putting them into action. And a lot of the questions that you're asking, these are the issues that we grapple with, in those review meetings, outside of these review meetings. And I wish I could tell you we had it all figured out, but we certainly don't. and I also want to talk just a little bit about how injury prevention, maternal and child health, and child death review, the case registry project, kind of intersect. I also have no personal things to disclose. So this is a little bit about our structure, because I think it helps give context. Colorado, our department is structured in a way that actually forces integration between injury prevention, maternal and child health, and child fatality review process. We sit in a division that's called the Prevention Services Division, and it basically has two separate centers, one chronic disease and active living, and then one that's where my center is, the Center for Healthy Families and Communities. So within there, we have an injury, suicide, and violence prevention unit, which houses the injury prevention program and child death review, in addition to our Office of Suicide Prevention, our Colorado Children's Trust Fund, and the Sexual Assault Prevention Program. So it's kind of all tied together, and we really utilize this structure through the child death review process, because experts that lead these different programs within the health department sit in various subcommittees for child fatality review. So we have the prevention experts at the table right there, so that kind of helps facilitate the prevention discussion. So we're very lucky, I think, in this regard, because it's, I know a lot of states kind of struggle with how to bring injury prevention and maternal and child health in. We are funded in my program, Injury Prevention and Child Death Review, is funded partially from MCH and partially from our core injury grant and a hodgepodge of other things that I'm sure all of you have different funding sources. But it is a nice structure, and it kind of grounds child death review in prevention. And at our health department, we feel very strongly about it. That's the whole point why we're looking at all these, you know, rather depressing case after case after case. It's really important to keep, you know, the prevention at the forefront. So housing it together with injury prevention really allows us to do that in a variety of different ways. Just a little bit about our child fatality prevention system. We've been around for a long time, since 1989, and it kind of started as a relationship between our State Department of Human Services as well as the Department of Public Health. It's always been a multidisciplinary and voluntary process. We have a host of partners that you've seen on two previous slides that are involved in the system. In 2005, we became legislatively mandated, and this was good, something we'd worked for a long time that kind of codified our existence. Sadly, however, it came with $0 to be able to implement it, and so that's one of the reasons why our Title V money helps support the activities of the Child Fatality Review. Our legislation creates a 45-member state team, and some of which are state-appointed people from various state agencies. We have 17 members that are appointed by the governor from a variety of very specific fields, as well as some team-selected members, so really looking for those experts in different areas to participate in the process. Our legislation requires that we review all deaths of children under age 18, where there may be some kind of preventable cause of death. And so we interpret that as we look at them all, with the exception of some prenatal deaths get kind of just a brief overview, and we have some physicians that help us with that process. But we do the full review process for every death. And again, our point is really to make prevention recommendations. We're required to submit a legislative report every year to the legislature to make policy recommendations. And then we have been trying to figure out a good way to get our community-based recommendations where they need to go. In addition to the state-level team, the legislation also allows for local-level teams to exist, but doesn't mandate that they exist. So right now, we have 6 local teams that are active and are reviewing cases at the local level. And because we have 64 counties, that's not very many, we have to review all the cases at the state level as well. So there's a bit of duplication, but we've been working on trying to reduce that a little bit. So currently, because we review all the deaths, and this is a time-consuming process with few staff members, we are currently just started reviewing 2008 deaths. So we're behind the times, and this has been something that our state team has been, you know, really asking us to address, because, you know, we don't have the most current information. And when you're talking about something like safe sleep, it's important to know what's going on right now. And one of the reasons why we were really excited to participate in the sudden unexpected infant death case registry, which I'll talk about in a minute. So when we review our deaths, we, you know, involve the same kinds of partners that you've seen on other presenter slides, and we divide our case reviews into topic areas. So we have subcommittees that group the deaths so that we can have experts around the table that specialize in those types of circumstances related to death. So we have a motor vehicle subcommittee. We have a violent subcommittee that looks at suicides and homicides. We have a sudden unexpected infant death committee that looks at those, et cetera. So we've really been looking at these cases for a long time, though, because we were so kind of behind in terms of the data, we're just now starting to get to the point where we can use some of the recommendations that have been coming out of these committees. In Colorado, we've seen the same types of shifts that Lena mentioned are going on in terms of the classification. These are data from death certificates, so SIDS R95 codes undetermines R99 and accidental suffocations W75s. And so you can see that, you know, there's been you know, blip in 2007, sadly. But we have some decreases in SIDS classification and a slight increase, or looks like a slight increase in undetermineds and accidental suffocations increasing. So that's something that our team has been looking at. This is just an example of a graph that we included in our last legislative report analyzing deaths from 2004 to 2006, that just, trying to look at some of those circumstances. And I didn't include a lot of slides around all the various circumstances that we have the ability to look at, but bed sharing is certainly one of the issues that we've been taking a look at, regardless of how these deaths are being classified by the coroners. And in Colorado, we do have a coroner system, which means, 64 different people are ruling things in 64 different ways. The requirements to become a coroner in Colorado is a high school education and 6 months residency in the county. So we don't have, we have one medical examiner in our state in Denver, and a lot of people who actually have medical degrees, but many who don't. We have lawyers, we have some nurses, we have some complete lay coroners who really rely on those medical experts to do this. So this, we see differences in classification all across the board, and now that we've been participating in the case registry, we're noticing this even more. so it's something to, with a grain of salt, so we keep trying to remind our team members that really we're looking at the circumstances, and regardless of how these deaths are classified, bed sharing, soft bedding, prone sleep position, these things are coming up regardless of how the deaths were classified by the coroner. So that's what we've been trying to focus on as we go. When we had the opportunity to apply to participate in the, I always say SUDI instead of SUID, so if I say that, I don't know why. I can't even say it. The SUID case registry. We are really excited for a variety of reasons. This required us, as Lena said, to review cases within 3 months of the death and to get those records in on time. And so it was a bit of a pilot for us at the state level to say, okay, we've been getting data 3 years after the deaths occurred. Can we really do it with these 64 coroners and 200 some odd law enforcement agencies, actually get these records at the state level in a timely manner? And we've been very excited that we have been able to do that in almost every case. So it's been able to allow us to speed up the system a little bit and to really look at some current cases. We're still looking at all of the older cases to catch up the system as a whole, but we've really been concentrating on these new cases as part of the registry. We identify cases using death certificates. Since we have our vital records office at the state level there, once those deaths are reported to them, they give us a list on a monthly basis, and then we begin to collect all of the records from various agencies. At minimum, these agencies are the ones that we have to have records from in order to bring the case to the multidisciplinary review. Some cases have additional data sources, and as we get some of these things back, we go through and see if there's opportunity to collect additional records for more information. We abstract the cases, we review it in a multidisciplinary team, and then most importantly, we identify factors that contributed to the cause of death, and then using those, identify the prevention strategies. So in 2010, just looking at a brief snapshot of some of the cases we have in our system, we've identified 30 cases to date. Our vital record system is a little bit behind the times, so most of the deaths are current through about end of June, beginning of July, so there is a little bit of lag time from when the coroners get the information to vital records and then it gets to us. So on average, we have about 70 cases that would fit this category each year. So I think we're fairly on track for those. Of the cases that we've seen in the subcommittee so far, many of them have involved some of these circumstances that we've already been taking a look at through our normal child death review process. So when we make recommendations, we look at it at several levels. We look at it at the community level, which would include things like education programs and campaigns, that kind of thing, many of the things that Terry mentioned. We look at systems issues, which are anything from investigative issues, issues at autopsy, which the new form allows us to do, as well as training et cetera, for different agencies that are involved in policy and legislation. So this is just a sample of some of the prevention recommendations that we have made looking at specifically the SUDI case registry cases. So, you know, a lot of these same things, safe sleep campaigns, these are recommendations we make at the individual case level and then aggregate. So these are selected ones that have come up in multiple cases. Some of our investigative recommendations have included these things. We know that there's huge inconsistencies in how these deaths are investigated, and so we've really been trying to do some education with coroners and death scene investigators to get them to use the SUDI reporting form so that there can, you know, be some consistency. And there's interest out there. People are interested in using the issues, and we're trying to connect those investigators with the right resources to get trained, et cetera. We also have autopsy recommendations, and we have our medical examiner, the only one we have in Denver, as well as several of the other doctors, forensic pathologists, participate on a review process. So they contribute largely to some of the recommendations around this area. So as I mentioned, we make all these recommendations at the state level, but they're also occurring at the local level as well. And so I just wanted to give you two examples from our local team reviews. This comes from El Paso and Teller County, which they're actually organized by judicial district is how they do their reviews. So they've really focused a lot on I guess kind of two categories of things, sort of mass media, education types of things. This is an example of a poster that they put together, as well as really partnering with their hospital to educate healthcare providers. They hold classes for healthcare providers within the two main hospital systems in this area to do education around safe sleep, and then also are working with child care center staff as well. In another county, Mesa County, which is the Grand Junction area on the western slope of our state, again, very similar things, though they also focused on healthcare providers at large rather than hospital folks. They took a look at really working with private practice physicians to get them to educate, and they have a small evaluation going on to see, and they have trying to get the physicians to really change their policies to make safe sleep be something that they talk about every time, and they have a little evaluation project going on to see if that's going to be effective in their area. And I'm not sure if this is going to play. I wanted to give you a sample of the radio ad. We'll see if it plays. They lied. They said it would work on that website. Well, so I apologize for that not working. Their radio piece is just a 30-second radio spot, but it was great because their coroner is actually the person that's speaking on there and talking about all of the elements of safe sleep. So they really had good community collaboration to work on that project. There are a number of challenges involved in this. There's inconsistent messaging coming from the health department. The breastfeeding folks say one thing, and the injury prevention folks sometimes say another thing. And you know, I know I walked into our kind of lunchroom area, and there was a bunch of breastfeeding brochures out there with pictures of kids bed sharing with lots of fluffy blankets and stuffed animals and a dog. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, this is inconsistent messaging that's coming on. There's also in Colorado some controversy around crib distribution. A lot of the local teams have really struggled with this as a recommendation, though the state team has been in support of it because of liability issues, and so that's something that we're grappling with. Also, because of the shift of diagnosis from SIDS to undetermined and accidental suffocation, some of our local teams, and even at the state level, are hesitant to use some of the national level resources that are available because they are all targeted at SIDS. And some communities have told us, you know, they don't even use that terminology anymore, so any material that they have that will say that term, they don't want to use it. Obviously, there's limited funding, and as the question earlier around how you get the denominator, makes evaluation really difficult and hard to figure out. So just kind of in closing here, because I think I talk too much and I'm a little bit out of time. You know, we're really trying to link our system together in Colorado to really use the fatality review system for the recommendations. Injury prevention funding from MCH and support for local level teams happens through there. We also really use the partnerships that the injury prevention program has established through the years to get these recommendations out, as I mentioned before. One of those partnerships is with Safe Kids Colorado, and currently we have are starting to collaborate with Safe Kids Colorado, which is based at our children's hospital here, to work on a safe sleep campaign or safe sleep initiative, and really pull together partners from a variety of different injury areas, as well as child death review teams and the stakeholders involved with that, to really try to do a unified statewide approach. We have a Safe Sleep Summit planned in December, and we are at that meeting going to be reviewing child death review data, looking at an action plan, and really grappling with a lot of the issues that some of you have raised through your questions to try to come up with some solid strategies. And just in closing, you know, I think that we have a lot of opportunities here. We have through the SUDI case registry project, I really think this has improved our child fatality risk system, you know, overall. We are really making sure we answer all of those questions and really being more diligent, I think, with data collection, which will hopefully inform our process. And I think the partnerships that we've built through MCH injury prevention and child death review will hopefully lead to a reduction of deaths in these areas.
All right, so the good news is we have the pleasure of hearing from four esteemed panelists, and the bad news is we just have a few minutes for questions and answers, so if you could keep it specific, that would be great. We'll start with you.
There's no way to get a denominator from vital statistics because vital statistics doesn't collect that information. When the child death review team see, and actually the number of infants dying on an adult bed was something like 76 or 78%, it's not 57. So of those cases that are coming in, that are sudden unexpected infant deaths, we're talking about more than three-quarters of those deaths are occurring on an adult bed, and then we have the information of those that are occurring either on couches, cribs, or couches, chairs, and adult beds. These are the cases they're seeing. So out of the deaths, this is a very, very high proportion. And you heard me say, as a grandmother, we went through the catalogs and said, what can we do to facilitate my daughter in sleeping with her infant, and she slept with him through 14 months, and they still come in and get into bed. That's a family tradition. What can we do to give her the tools to find a safe way to have the infant right there? Because if this high proportion of deaths that we're seeing from child death review teams, three quarters of the deaths are on an adult sleeping surface. We've got pillow top beds, we've got soft comforters, we're seeing the wedging issues where the infant gets pushed off the bed. Tired parents, I think, you know. Perry mentioned the number of cases we see where the infant dies while breastfeeding because the mother's so tired. So one of the things that we really need to work with is to work with the community. And I loved this idea of the co-sleeper. And I'm not going to speak to the current, you know, you have to go to Consumer Product Safety Commission right now, but the people that have been working on developing this closed sleeper, so it's right there, it's open, the mother's arm can reach out to the baby without an impediment of any sort. They're saying the manufacturers are making them too soft. So we're struggling with, you know, we still don't have a safe solution, and it's a concern that we all share.
All right, thanks. I think two more. Yes, sir.
I think, you know, we do need to acknowledge the denominator issue. And one way to look at that is to look at survey data on, you know, what the levels of co-sleeping bed sharing are. And, you know, that doesn't give you a direct denominator, but it gives you a sense of that. So I think, you know, that would be a good suggestion to look at that.
Steve, there is a national infant sleep study, a national infant sleep study that NICHD funds through, I think it's Boston. Anybody here from Boston University? I think it's funded through them. Of course, there are some limitations with the survey design and who they sample, et cetera, but I think overall the story is there's an increase, no matter how you slice and dice economic standing or socioeconomic standing, race, ethnicity, increase in reporting of bed sharing. Whether it's actually an increase or whether people are just more comfortable saying, yes, I sleep with my child, that's another story. But there is sort of, there's some things out there, they're just not well utilized at this point.
And I just think we just need to use those, like, because I think there are some real significant differences in socioeconomic status and where the breastfeeding rates are higher in higher income groups, they're lower in lower income groups, and those are the groups that have these disproportionate number of these, and so we're going to have to work out the message so that we focus on populations at greatest risk and not promote a disparity in our messaging.
Dr. Powell.
In review, so looking at the review data, all the variables you wanted, the bed size, who's in the bed, what was the usual sleep place, was there a pillow top, was it a pillow top mattress or not, that's all collected right now in the current case report that's used in all child death reviews and as well as in the SUID case registry, as well as those conflicting, mom said baby was placed on back and crib or found on back on crib, but lividity suggests the baby was found on the pillow face down. That's collected right now, so we can look at some of that.
All right, I want to thank you all for your attention, and there is an opportunity to continue the discussion as APHA's theme for National Public Health Week is Safety is No Accident, Live Injury-Free, so please feel free to stop by our booth in Exhibit Hall and pick up a brochure. Thank you.